This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with Kevin Davey White and it's a lovely chat. What an interesting life Kevin's got, from growing up in Paris to literally jumping on the Eurostar and coming to London to pursue a career in music. That, I mean, we go right into this, leading right the way through to ending up on the X Factor and to end up becoming a finalist on the X Factor. And you know, I guess you don't see that many people rocking it. On shows like that, and he'd done it by his own rules, and he played his own stuff, and chose to kind of, who gets on sort of prime time Saturday night pop television playing Hendrix and Zeppelin and doing what he does so well? It's a fascinating story, and you're going to enjoy it. He's such a nice guy as well, Kevin. Before we get on with that chat, let me tell you a few bits and pieces. I guess if it's your first time listening, I'd like to say, please go and have a look in the back catalogue when you get to the end of today's episode, because there's over 500 episodes. So you can go and listen to chats with, I mean, I've just mentioned rock and roll. I mean, Tommy Lee from Motley Crue or the Foo Fighters. We talk about some interesting indie stuff on this episode today. And when it comes to kind of indie music, then I've had the Kaiser Chiefs on, I've had the Killers on, who else have I had on? The Kooks. Oh gosh, I mean, I could just list 500 guests, but I guess that wouldn't really be the greatest podcast. So all I'll suggest is go over and have a look, whatever platform you're listening to this one on, go and have a look and just scroll right the way through, because I have been a lucky boy. From somebody that's got no background in broadcasting or anything like this, I just stumbled into this on Scroobius Pip's coattails, and it's just given me, you know, so many opportunities to speak to people that I have so much admiration for. And yeah, and I'd love you to go and listen to some of them chats. So, I mean, the best thing is just subscribe, then you won't miss anything. One of the other really nice things that's come from doing this podcast is the fact that a load of the listeners have signed up to my little Patreon, and I know this is the point where you just skip to the conversation, but I should say first that the Patreon costs $1 a month, so I think that's 70 odd pence, because, well, there's a cost of living crisis, right? So I didn't want to do what, you know, a lot of other Patreons are, and they can be, you know, $10 a month. So I've kept mine at 70p, purely because I want you to come over and be part of the little monthly live show hangout, because it's so much fun. And to tell you a little bit about that, basically, we jump on Zoom, and loads of the podcast listeners also, you know, that have signed up to the Patreon, they join it as well. And we pick a subject. I'm actually doing one tomorrow night, and the one By the time this podcast comes out, you'll be able to go and listen to it. But we're talking about our favourite music videos. And we pick a subject, and it's a lovely encore as well. It's not like we're all trying to be cooler than cool. It's just a really nice nostalgia-fueled chat with some absolutely delightful humans. There's such a nice bunch of people that that join these chats, and I'd love for more of you to come and experience these little monthly hangouts. As well as that, for your 70 pence a month, you get to watch all of the episodes. So I put all of these interviews up on Patreon, so you can go and watch the videos and put a face to the name. And unfortunately, it does mean you have to look at my melanid, but you can't have it all, right? I also put up little Spotify playlists as well, mixtapes and stuff like that. And you get access to the archives. So there's hundreds of like radio shows. I've done loads of radio shows during lockdown. Still do them as well, more sporadically now. But yeah, you get access to everything and loads of unreleased episodes. And that's all over on Patreon, which that 70 pence goes in the pot to help sort of pay for the podcast, really. And yeah, and so you can find out about that and anything else you need to know about the podcast at offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. That's off the beat and, not beaten, beatandtrackpodcast.com. Or just head over to Patreon, Patreon, and just search Off the Beat and Track and you'll find it. Or the links to it are in everything to do with this podcast. I'm over on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well. Give us a follow and drop us a message and let us know who you'd like to hear me interview next, because I'm always looking for suggestions. I think that's it. Is there anything else I need to whittle on about before the good stuff starts? I don't think so. But thanks ever so much for being here today. And I hope you enjoy this lovely chat with Kevin, because he's such a nice fella, and I'm sure you're going to love it. So let's get on with that chat. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the wonderful Kevin Davey White.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording. Kevin, how are you today?
I'm very good, thank you, and you?
Yeah, I'm not bad. Where are you today? Where's home?
Home is walking.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Well, before I get into the first track on your playlist today, I just want to ask you, Kevin, to sort of take your mind back a couple of years, because I'm so interested in people that work in songwriting and production and such, how they found the sort of 18, 19 months of lockdown and how that impacted on them mentally and creatively.
All right. So it's the first time I had this question. Yeah. Mentally, it was, it has been tough at the beginning. And because, yeah, I was just traveling to New Zealand, and then when we landed, I've seen my calendar and all the emails were saying everything's going to be cancelled there. And then I said, okay, it's going to be like holiday, but with no money come in. I was like, wow. And then, I've seen the world going down a little bit. And but I had this chance to actually have my wife as well to stop doing everything we're doing, and it just recharged the battery of being together. And creatively, I always have, when is there is any hard time in my life, it's the good time for me to write.
Always.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Like, you look at all the greatest songs ever written, most of them are about heartbreak, right?
Yeah. 99%, yeah.
But I think that's really good. I mean, to sort of talk about my kind of experience with that is I was in bands way back in the 90s and was the songwriter. It was literally the first time I ever had my heart broken. I was like, right, now I can let this completely grind me down, or I can channel it into something. And
exactly,
and
yeah.
then all of a sudden you just, I guess, you know, it's like an exorcism of an outpouring of, you know, of heartbreak. But at the end of it, if you can have an album's worth of songs, then it's not being wasted, has it? It's
not at all.
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, exactly what you mean. For me, it's like a therapy, almost. Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. I can express things that I didn't know how to put into words or into a conversation. When people are telling me stories, and just get me so inspired, because, yeah, I'm. I went through hard times, but not enough to write, I don't know, maybe five albums. But yeah. when I'm listening to other stories from other people, it gets me inspired. I'm like, oh my God, that's how you felt. And I try to put myself in their shoes. And then, yeah, it's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, let's start your playlist. And I'm going to ask you, please, Kevin, to tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
Oh my God, yeah. So this song is Baker Street from Gary Rafferty. Is this song one of the first time I've heard it and remember it. I was this introduction is so cool. That sax, oh wow. Makes me want to learn how to play sax.
I mean, is that the most iconic saxophone riff ever? Surely it's up there, isn't it?
Yeah, I even thought you said saxophone. I was like, it's exactly that. Yeah, this is one of the most iconic, definitely.
Yeah. It's. Have you ever heard the Foo Fighters cover it?
Oh, my God, no.
Foo Fighters do a really, really good cover of it. They used to play it live quite a few years ago now. But, yeah, it's a pretty, as you can imagine, it's a pretty rocking take on it.
After that, I'm going to listen to this, definitely.
I mean, in regards to intros and your work, Kevin, like, you know, you look at something like Baker Street, and within the first 5 seconds, you get the real money shot of that song. You get that, and you know where it's going from there, and it just grabs you. Whereas, you know, there's other styles of intros that previous guests have chosen, which might be, you know, these 3 minute sort of elongated sort of Led Zeppelin journeys just to get to the riff and things like that. When you approach songwriting yourself, do you sort of opt for something more instant, or are you happy to sort of, you know, maybe buck that trend of the fact that nowadays, this is a long question, bear with me, Kevin. But,
there is.
But at the moment, you know, when you're looking at the way that people market their music, there's lots of people using things like TikTok and Spotify playlists that are very, very important. And we seem to be in a world where attention spans are quite short. And does that ever factor into your creative process? So I guess where I'm going with this question, Kevin, is when you're approaching an intro, like where's your mind at in regards to how you want it to play and how quickly you want to grab people and not, but also not compromise, you know, your creativity.
The creativity, yeah. Yeah, so I tend to listen just how I would feel to actually play the song live. So if it feels like, oh, it needs a little bit more bars to build up, I will just go for it. And then I don't really think about how it's going to be played on the radio. I just go with how is the justice of the song. It's more for me, it's just more about the justice of the song than make it short to make sure that people will listen. If they don't listen, that's okay. There will be someone that will be interested enough to, actually, I feel that, because that's exactly what I want to share into music, is just to make you feel something. And if you don't feel, it's okay. Someone else will feel. Yeah.
I think it's really important what you just said there, because I do think, certainly maybe more commercial pop music, that people do lean away from that emotional connection with the listener in favor of almost the science of pop, of trying to chop off all the fat. So it's like, we know this is a winning formula to infiltrate, you know, Spotify playlists and TikTok. It does work, but unfortunately, I think that that's a very fashionable way of approaching music, but I don't think it's a very stylistic way. And I think fashion comes and goes, but I do think style will outlive fashion every time. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. I know exactly what you mean. And you have a point. Fashion comes and goes. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Right, I'm going to take you back now, and I'm going to ask you for track two to tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Wow. that's Ray Charles. It was Hard Times. And I was actually having one of the hardest times when I've listened to this song. It was when I decided to move to England, to London. And it was with my rock band, and we didn't even save money to arrive here. We just bought the ticket and then flew. We just took the train to arrive here. And then, it was quite tough. And I remember I was seeing my account going down and down and down and down. And at the end, I was just not even have enough money to actually put a head over my head. I mean, a roof over my head. And so I had to, when I was trying to pack up everything, I always liked to play music, and I had my MP3 back in days in there. I was listening to this and Hard Time. It was one of the first time where actually, you know, when there is lyrics that you understand the lyrics, and then it's okay, you feel what they feel. But when you're actually leaving this at the moment, and you know that this person was living that in his time, and it was like a true connection of the songs, and I felt that. Yeah,
absolutely. Can you sort of tell us a little bit about how that journey to come to the UK come about? Because I'm fascinated to know more about your story. Yeah. So where was you born, and how did you sort of get into music? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I'm born in France, Paris, and grew up there for a while. And then my dad one day was playing. He loves to play music every Sundays, and he made me discover so many genres in music, and I quite fell in love with music through his ears. And one day he was playing a VHR cassette. It was a Woodstock, and it was Jimi Hendrix was playing. I was like, wow, I'd love to play like that. So I grabbed the guitar and then tried to learn the guitar, and I switched to System of a Down, and then I switched to everything. Like, it was literally everything that has guitar was into it. And I fell in love with this. And then I remember I was walking down the street, and it was like a little festival in France, the 14th of July. It's like the Bastille Days. And
that's when I was in Corsica. And obviously, that's a French island, and Bastille Day, I was there for that. There was fireworks.
Oh,
it was
my
great.
God.
It was fireworks. Amazing. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's very festive, like everyone have a good set of mind, and there were some bands were playing outside that day. I was like, wow, makes me want to have a band as well. And I created a band. I didn't even know how to properly play guitar, like jamming. I just know what I created, not what's the chords and everything, but I managed to get some people playing the drum and the bass, and that's it. We create a rock band, and then from there I was just writing, and then playing in places. And then we were like, oh my God, we started in French, and it didn't work for what we were doing in terms of the rock. And I was like, oh, we should just go to England. It's close, and people will understand what we're playing, and it will feel right for us. And we decided to move.
That's fantastic. I mean, I just want to sort of go back to something you said and you said that you was watching Woodstock and you saw that Hendrix performance.
Yeah.
And how that just struck you that, right, look how amazing this is. I want to do that.
Yeah.
And I think when I mentioned earlier that there's fashion and there's style, kids could now still watch that Woodstock performance of Hendrix and go, Holy shit, would be like, that is what I want to do. Check this out, because that is completely unique. His style, and it is a timeless style, and it is not dated. It's still, you know, it's transcends generations. Yeah. It's absolutely.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, yeah, well, look.
Definitely.
Let's go back to early days in France and tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school.
Oh, well, the time of school was Chop Suey from System of Down. I remember I will never forget this little woman. This little girl was out of the front of the school, and she was dressing. She was so, I found it really attractive. She was cute, and she had like a rock emo vibe, and I was like, I'm sure, but because with friends, it was the beginning of YouTube. So we saw this video of two boys doing this Chop Suey video. And it was quite enjoyable to watch, but as well, the song, we fell in love with the song, but we didn't know what was it. And we were like, we should ask her. I'm sure she knows. And we asked her, and then she said, hey, System of a Down. It was like, that's it. And then since then, I was like listening to every single album. Yeah.
It's a crazy, I mean, obviously we've not seen much new music from System of a Down for quite a few years now.
Yeah.
But the impact they made I guess it was when Chop Suey dropped really. And from that moment on, you know, I guess they become one of the biggest rock bands in the world for quite a few years. And it's Chop Suey as a record, it's a fucking crazy record, isn't it? It is all over the place.
Over the place.
But every little part is so melodic and so infectious, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it taught me that even with the rock and hard rock or metal, you can still make people dance.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That was key in my creativity.
Yeah. And I mean, when you was at school, back in France, was music something that you knew you was going to pursue as a career, or was that something that was on the back burner and, you know, there was other things that you wanted to do? What did you want to do when you was at school?
When I was at school, I just got my degree because my dad always told me to have a degree. And then after that, I got my degree. I'm good at the music.
Just go rock.
And I just focused on that.
I mean, did it, like, in the lead up to sort of coming to the UK to sort of, you know, progress that your career, I mean, what was the sort of scene like in whereabouts in France was you?
I was in Paris.
Right, so in Paris, what was the sort of scene like, and when was that? When was that, sort of like early 2000s, around the time?
Early 2000s.
So what was the sort of scene like in the sort of Parisian or live scene?
I started, it was like 2011, something like that. And the music scene were more jazz, pop. The rap, the grime wasn't there yet. And yeah, it was like, there is this rock, French rock, we call it the Bobo rock. It's like the Parisian. And it was in French. It was very nice in their own way, I respect, but it wasn't the rock that I grew up with, like Led Zeppelin and stuff. So I was like, it's missing that kind of a soul into the rock, like this. Not anger, but this like energy, strong energy that I was missing. So we couldn't fit into that market there.
And it's weird as well, because as in the UK, you know, looking to France around then, it was a big time for, I guess, UK sort of indie bands getting remixed by French producers, such as, you know, things like Ed Banger and Sebastian and what was the label? With Jerry Boothier's label, I can't think, remember what that was called. But there was so much going on in that sort of French electronic scene. Obviously, Daft Punk, and you know, all of that was filtering through. And it was all sort of filtering through into UK guitar music, and so it was quite. But there was a Parisian band from that era that I put on a few times at shows in the UK. They were called Brooklyn. And and they were just they weren't really rock, they were more kind of like sort of indie sort of stuff. It did seem that there was quite an exciting sort of scene as an onlooker from the UK into what was going on in Paris around that time. And it's interesting that you're looking the other way, thinking, I need to get over to the UK, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about how you found, you know, you said it was obviously. You reference Hard Times by Ray Charles.
Yeah.
But tell me a little bit about, you know, when you get to the UK, and how many of you come over? How many, like, was in the band? Or did you just come over on your own?
We were just three of us.
And so,
three of us, yeah.
How was that? I mean, you know, was there a plan, or was it, let's just get there and see what happens?
Yeah. literally it was that we knew that music, the rock was there, it's like the home of rock, and we were like, it's there, so we're just going to try to make our way there. So we started in the street, playing in the street, and didn't work. Both of them gave up, came back to France, and I was I'm just there on my own. Just I started busking, playing the bars, and then playing in little venues, and then build up everything myself in the end.
Okay. Well, look, let's get another a track in before we pick back up on your journey. And I'm going to ask you to tell me the first song that you remember buying from a record store, please, Kevin.
This one, I'm a bit embarrassed.
This is never a cool one. Everyone's got a shit record that they bought first. It's got to be embarrassing, mate. Always.
My parents gave me we call it how we call this, money pocket, when we earn a little bit, and then I was like, I'm gonna buy the song that I like at the moment. And it was Ricky Martin, Un, Dos, Tres. But not thinking of it, it was just like, wow. It could have been the Black Keys, or, you know.
Yeah, in hindsight, it could have been. The reality of it was Ricky Martin. You've just got to deal with that, mate.
Exactly.
Okay, so tell me about, like, when you get to the UK and you start, you know, you're saying, like, you know, playing acoustic shows and coffee shops and things like that. Like, when did it sort of progress to playing what in the UK we call the sort of toilet circuit, you know, like your Dublin castles and all your kind of small, your pub venues around London. Like, when did it sort of move into them sort of venues quite quickly?
It did, because I was, the school for me was I was playing Covent Garden all the time. And I remember even this canceller, You have to have a license there to play, but he liked my music and actually let me play.
Oh, wow.
I managed. There's some people walking, stopping, and then say, "Oh my God, I would like you to play at this bar," and then I play at that bar, and then there's someone at that bar say, "You should play at this bar," and then it build up from there. I was like, "Oh my God, you should play in this venue." And then I came to that venue, and then it just evolved it like this. And it was like maybe 1, 2 years when I was building up.
That's such an interesting approach to doing it because, you know, if I look back at my experiences there, it was like, you know, you'd send a demo to a venue and hopefully they'd phone you back and book you. But you're standing in Covent Garden showcasing what you do and people are seeing it and it's growing, I guess, very organically like that. That's fantastic. And so did you stay with the same band that you came to the UK with, or did that kind of evolve into a, you know, a different band?
No, they went back home, so I was there on my own, and I was here, I mean, on my own, and I just managed to find some musician. I was mostly playing acoustic, and I managed to actually have one band sound with my big jumbo acoustic guitar. Now it made me discover a kind of different way to play the guitar. It's not like very tapping, but it's my strum that gives that percussion.
I mean, I'm interested to know, like, you know, your band go back to Paris and, you know, you're living in a strange country and you're busking and you're trying to, you know, you're standing in the middle of a street in one of the busiest streets in London, and you know, you're baring your soul to strangers, hundreds and thousands of strangers a week. Where does that confidence come from? Would you say you're a confident person, Kevin?
I just believe that comfort, yeah. I think I am a confident, yeah, I am a confident person. I just believe when I set myself into something, no matter what, I just go for it.
So you're driven.
Yeah, I'm a driven person. Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely.
Do you think that's important in the music industry?
Yeah, I remember when I started with the rock band back in France, we went to record that first EP, and horrible one, by the way. The producer said to us, I remember he was looking at me directly in my eyes, and he was saying, "You have something very special, but I will warn you, musician equals struggler. If you have this in mind, you will go far." And I was like, "He's right, by
Yeah,
the way."
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's talk about clubbing.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And for track five, I'd like to know the song that soundtracked your years clubbing.
So yeah, there's this song every time. I don't know if it's just maybe like a community of black people, or but this song makes me crazy all the time. It's like, you know, when you go to a festival and there's like maybe Queen of the Stone Age is playing and there's a mosh. For it's that kind of song for me when I'm clubbing. When I hear, I don't know if I can say, but N, the N word with in Paris from Kanye West. And when they play this song in the clubs, I'm just going crazy, pushing everyone, but in a fun way, like, get out, get out, get out. I just love the song.
The groove in that is ridiculous, isn't it?
It is
So
so
good.
good,
So good. Oh, it's a great chat. It's a great chat. So tell me a little bit, to pick back up on your journey. So you start playing the kind of, you know, the sort of entry level, I guess, venues around London and such, you know, like the aforementioned Dublin Castle and your Bull and Gates and Pratt and Camden and things like that.
When did it
start to really get momentum and you know, you found that there was another level of interest in what you was doing and how this could potentially, you know, be a legitimate career move?
So after doing all this toilet tour, I end up to play at the Spiritual Bar. It's a place in Camden. It's very, like, out of the main street. But all the time the music over there is so great. Jay Bird came from there. Michael Koenigsegg came from there as well. And it's a very tiny bar, but when you play in... And I get all the time this crowd, and it's like almost we're playing at a festival. And I was like, I actually feel that I have something, like I can control a room, just me and my guitar. I know that I have something. I don't know how I can get to that, but I know I have something. And it was with my own songs as well that I was getting the crowd. And I remember there is open mic where apparently there is some famous people come to that bar, and I was like, I'm going to go there. And it wasn't an open mic, it was a competition. And she said to me that the owner said to me, "Are you have to sign and you have to apply before to get to these, you can't just be there." And I said, okay, sorry, I thought it was just an open mic. And they were doing the sound check and no one was on stage. So I had my acoustic guitar, I grabbed it, went on stage, and then play while they were doing they were talking about how I was going to perform tonight. And everyone stopped. And the owner came back to me, say, "Oh my God, I want you in this competition." And I won this competition. It was like several stages. And at the end, someone from X Factor was killing people. And they said, "Tomorrow is the last day of the audition. Would you like to do it?" I said, "If I don't do any cues, yeah." And I did it. They said, "Come at that time." And I went at that time. And yeah, after that, I'll end up to the final of it.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. So talk us for a little bit about the experience of that.
Yeah, X Factor was so much fun in terms of, because I knew who I was as an artist. So I came in this TV show in a way where I was just having fun. And when they were saying, "Oh, you should play this song, I should play this song," I was always open-minded. And so I was like trying their songs. And in the end, we found it was actually the one that I wanted to play.
Yeah.
But the fact that I've tried it before, they can't say, "You didn't try it." Huh? So it was just, even for Jimi Hendrix, where no one played Jimi Hendrix on this TV program.
Yeah.
But I played it because I tried other songs, and you know? And it was just so much fun. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. I mean, I guess your confidence must grow something, you know, ridiculous levels to be able to know that you're walking out on that stage and, you know, to probably one of the biggest audiences in, you know, in UK television.
And, yeah.
You know, how do you sort of control the nerves when it comes to stuff like that?
Same as you come, same as any shows for me, because, you are always want to be not the best in terms of competition, but just the best show that I can give in for that performance.
Yeah.
So any performances I was giving, my 2,000 person,
Incredible.
So the stress was there for, like the usual stress that I would have.
Yeah. Okay. For track 6, I want to know your favorite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Wow, some news. The fact that I'm
Fantastic.
not come from the UK,
Yeah.
I'm almost the west side of England.
That's a
I
that's a
decided
I'll let you have that, but you are stretching it there, Kevin.
stretching a lot. I would say muse.
I mean, can you see the sort of parallels from, seeing Hendrix at Woodstock to and how electric that was and how intense and otherworldly. Can you see the
Yeah.
parallels between that and Muse?
In Muse.
Yeah, because
Oh yeah. Muse, the thing I love with him is just he they managed to actually mix how we call it, Radiohead inside, Queen, the kind of Jimi Hendrix or the whole blues and rock into something very so special with the classic music. It's just like going to school when you listen to them.
Yeah.
And I just love them. I just love all the songs in it.
Absolutely. I think when Muse first came out and when they sort of released like Muscle Museum and Sunburn and stuff like
Yeah.
that, it was
Ooh.
it that the press got on them that they were this is at the time when Radiohead were probably the biggest band in the UK, and it was like, this is going to be the next Radiohead. And then I think they
Yeah.
just lent heavily on, like you said, Queen with the kind of theatrics and
Yeah.
It went to, but even stuff like, you say Hendrix and that, but if I, you listen to like Supermassive Black Hole, that could be a
What's
Prince
that?
record.
It
Like,
could be a Prince record, yeah,
you could totally
definitely.
imagine Prince playing that.
Oh,
And
yeah.
there's like, and I just, and I think when you see like or dislike Muse, when you see them live, it's something special, isn't it?
Yeah, it was my first. I remember my sister booked me the, gave me the ticket for my birthday. It was actually the first show that I've seen live. It was them at the Stade de France. So it was like the stadium tour they were doing. Oh, and I remember he was at the end of Stockholm Syndrome. He played a riff with this guitar. This guitar was crying, and it made me have tears of happiness. I'm not an emotional person, but this was just so cool.
Oh, incredible, incredible. Okay, right, for your last track, this is where you get to turn someone onto something new. So I'm going to ask you to tell me a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to go and listen to.
Oh my God, yeah. So I'm a massive fan of Queen of the Stone Age, and there is a song called Tangled Up in the Plaid. And this song is, I think I never even heard it in radio. They didn't barely played live as well. And I think for me it's one of the of my favorite song of Queen of the Stone Age, because from every single part of this song is building up. And if you hear it again, you really hear how precise they added the thing at the certain time. And it just, I love it. Yeah.
Fantastic. What a band. Well, we make it easy for
Yeah.
people to listen to that and all the other tracks that we've spoken about, Kevin, because we put together a little Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast so people can go and listen to all of your song picks. And obviously, we'll be putting your music on there as well. So with that in mind, what's happening with your music? What can people expect in the coming months?
So in this month, in August, the 25th of August, I am going to release my first album. And I'm very excited about it because it's like 13 songs. And inside you will have a lot of rock music, which I always wanted to share with my people. And you will finally get this into it. And there is some music that I'm very proud of in terms of how I could mix the African, the rock, the metal, and the soul together in one song.
Yeah.
So yeah, I look forward to share that.
Oh, fantastic. And will there be live shows?
Yeah, it will be live shows. Yeah, I have a tour as well in November when I'm gonna play some of the songs as well.
Oh, fantastic. Kevin, if listeners to this podcast want to keep up to speed with releases, tour dates, and everything else, where's the best place to keep up to speed with you and follow you?
KevinDavyWhite.com. Yeah, simple. If you know how to write Kevin, it's Kevin Davy, DAVY, and then white, like the color.com. You will find everything.
Fantastic. Yeah. And if it's cool with you, when this comes out, we'll tag you in this on Instagram so people can go and find you if they haven't done so already. Oh, yeah,
please. That would be amazing.
Oh, Kevin, it's been an absolute delight talking records with you today. I'm going to press stop, but don't go anywhere.
Yeah, there is.
There you go. What a crazy story. How mad's that? Just jumping on a train, starting playing like acoustic bars and that, stumbling to a competition and almost blag your way through that, onto that competition. You know, what a happy accident that was. And to then get cherry picked, Q jump the X Factor. And then before you know it, you're in the final playing to like, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. And then fast forward to recording them and releasing your debut album. What an interesting story. You know that I often ask guests about how driven they are. I think that shows incredible levels of drive. Go check out Kevin's music and while you're over on Spotify listening, then subscribe to this podcast, then you won't miss any future episodes. And I'll be back in a few days with another episode. Like I say, in the meantime, go explore that back catalogue because there's over 500 episodes. And why not join us at the live show and on Zoom? I should point out as well, also on that, you can be really involved and you can chat and you can get to feature on the episode, or you can have your camera off or your mic off and just sit there and enjoy the show and other people's input. So it's up to you. But everything you need to know about this podcast is on the website, which is offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'm back next time. In the meantime, be nice to each other, and thanks again for listening. Bye-bye.